Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Conversion Theory by Rich Restucci, narrated by Michael Kramer. In the brain and not the chest, headshots are the very best. Fido. Majestic. A red light flashed near the door.
3 minutes!
Came screaming through our headsets, and I knew it was about to get real. I looked around at the inside of the helicopter, wondering just how stupid I was. I looked at Kinga, a Marine Corps Forces Special Operations Command jarhead. He was standing and checking the pack of the other MARSOC Marine, Remo. Where Kinga is a guy who could kill you from a mile away, Remo is more hands-on. Don't get me wrong. Kinga is badass, but Remo used to teach other Marines how to kill. He could use anything as a weapon and could kill with a toothpick. No shit, a toothpick. He was equally as deadly when unarmed. They both felt me staring at them and looked at me at the same time. "Are we really doing this?" I asked, pausing in my writing.
"All it takes is all you got," Kinga smirked. "Besides, this is your idea."
They both looked at me harder, if it were possible.
"Up," said Remo. I stood, and he went over my pack, checking things. We were about to jump off of a helicopter onto the Majestic Maersk, a giant container ship. The last time I had been on this boat, we had gone through a hurricane. I could see the giant vessel out the window. She was adrift, and many of the containers had broken loose and were haphazardly tossed askew at weird angles. They created a labyrinth of steel on the massive deck. Many of the huge colored boxes that I remember from before were nowhere to be seen, having gone overboard during the storm. One was dangerously close to going over now, and hung a full 15 feet over the edge of the deck. The first bit of weather, and it was history. The Majestic looked like a skyscraper laying down on the water. It was positively enormous. Oh, yeah. And it was crawling with zombies. So this is one of my journals, which is basically a zombie story, and if you're reading it, that means I'm dead, and you found it someplace, or I've given it to you to read. My two friends and I are about to embark on a rescue mission to save the collective asses of another group of my friends and some poor folks that were trapped on this death boat. But I digress. The weather was nice as we came in on final approach. Flat-ass calm, the weatherman on Atlantis told us before we left. If you've read my first two journals, then you know that Atlantis is a floating asylum, meaning oil rig, in the Gulf of Mexico. You also know that I'm going to rescue my big buddy's ship, my girlfriend, and a soldier friend from this boat. Yes, his name is Ship. His parents were mean, I guess. When I mentioned up above that the deck was crawling, I wasn't shitting you. I could see at least a few hundred of the pus bags, as I call them. They had been searching for food before they heard the helo, but now every red undead eye was on us. The food is me. I'm sure you know this, as we are more than a year into this apocalypse thing, but just in case, you should probably run if you see a dead guy walking. Unless the dead guy is running, then you should probably know two more things. He's not dead, but still wants to kill you, and you need to run faster than he does. I know I'm jumping around here. Sorry. I'm scared shitless, and this is the beginning of a new journal. Remo gave me a clap on the back of my Condor assault pack.
You're good.
Remo doesn't talk much. He didn't say a word when he handed me a toothpick. Again, no shit. The red light turned green with a buzzing sound, and Kinga slid the portal open. The wash from the rotor hit us, and I smelled the sea air again. We were about 15 feet above the roof of the superstructure of the Majestic when Kinga tossed out two black ropes. He and I attached the ropes to a little metal thingy that was attached to my waist. I don't remember what it's called, but when I pull down and back across my waist, it slows my descent during a rappel.
Carabiner!
It's a carabiner. I was about to lean out when the co-pilot held up this journal in front of me. I had left it on the seat. I nodded a thanks, shoved it in my tactical webbing, and zipped down the rope.
I went with Kinga, and Remo followed when we were both down safely. The co-pilot pulled up the ropes, and the helo took off. Bastard didn't even wave goodbye. Probably because he knew we were already dead, but we hadn't figured it out yet. The rotor wash receded, as did the noise of the helicopter. The noise was replaced with the sounds of the dead. There were cries and moans in that rasping hack. It's unnatural, and I longed for the helo to drown them out once more. The bird wasn't coming back, though. Our extraction would be by boat, tomorrow night at the earliest, if we were still alive. The boat would wait for 24 hours if no contact was made with us, and after that, we would be written off as dead and left here. Captain Schumitz of the destroyer Stockdale would send another team to die and would probably keep sending them until he had no one left to send. He had an ulterior motive for us being on this tub. He wanted some data and a key. A key was weird-looking, and the data concerned experiments on undead. He wanted these things badly, and I couldn't help but believe his higher-ups knew something we didn't. I hadn't heard the cries of the dead in more than 2 days. It's not something you get used to, but it's certainly better not hearing them. Remo and Kinga set up a communications system that looked like an upside-down umbrella attached to a stereo.
"Pluto, this is Hammer One. How copy, over?"
I strode carefully to the edge of the hatch in the steel roof of the superstructure. I'd used it before. You really can't imagine how big this ship is until you've been on it. Even from the air, it's huge. But when you're on board, it's like you're in the city walking between big buildings. From this vantage, we were at the highest point of the ship. I opened the hatch and took a peek in the wheelhouse. Mistake, as the stink that wafted up from there almost knocked me out. I was still gagging when I felt a hand on my shoulder and looked up at Kinga. "Last time you go off by yourself, I'll shoot you next time." I was 20 feet away from them and didn't think that was going off by myself. I decided on discretion and just nodded. Remo was there in a moment and passed me a black Sharpie marker.
"Don't open any doors unless we're all ready. Draw the inside of the wheelhouse."
I did. I drew the crap out of it right on the white steel of the boat. The wheelhouse was maybe 60 or 70 feet wide, housed at the top of the superstructure. The windows fore and aft looked both out and down, and there was a door, hatch, at both ends, with a metal stairway descending to the deck stemming from each hatch. Two other doors, these made of wood, led from the back of the wheelhouse to an internal stairway, which in turn led to the interior of the ship. Kinga pointed to three places, one on each end and one at the back middle of the drawing.
"Only three ways in?"
"Four, if you include this hatch." Remo used his knife to bang on the side of the steel. We waited a minute, and he did it again. We all stared into the hole. There was a ladder down, and we could see some components, but nothing that wanted to eat us. Remo pulled out a mirror on a telescoping stick, extended it, and shoved it through the hatch. I raised my eyebrows.
"Clear?"
"Negative. Three, at least. One standing by the port side hatch, one sitting next to him, and one sitting on the deck halfway across the wheelhouse."
"The wheelhouse was secure the last time I was here. Nothing was getting through the hatches, and the rear doors were locked tight and braced. Why the hell would they leave?" Kinga used his own mirror and did his own recon. "Do we engage?" I didn't have a mirror, and that shit was going on my list of must-haves if I lived through this.
"I can't recon the whole wheelhouse. If there are more sitting down behind the consoles, there could be 50 of them in there."
I shrugged.
"So give a yell." "I would prefer not to compromise our stealth."
"Then what did you bang on the hatch with your knife for?" He looked at me, then at Kinga, shrugged, and stood. Unpacking a coil of rope, he tied one end to an antenna housing and started toward the front of the wheelhouse. He peered over the edge, and I gawked at him.
"What the hell are you doing?"
"Taking a look through the front windows."
He tied up, threw the other end of the rope over, and disappeared over the side. I instantly heard those awful undead cries through the hatch. Remo climbed back up, and Kinga helped him over the edge.
Nope. Only three. Center doors are wide open, though.
So we deactivate the three here, Kinga whispered. Secure the doors as fast as possible and use this as our FOB.
What's an FOB?
The disapproving eye roll from Kinga made me instantly regret the question. Bastard looked just like Ship would have if I had asked him about internet protocols or had said clip when I meant magazine.
Forward operating base, Remo told me. It's where we'll store our shit and fall back to if we get into it. We can exfil back through this bulkhead in case of emergency.
He rubbed his chin.
I drop down first, take them out with this.
He drew his giant knife.
Or suppressed fire. You follow and secure the doors.
He had indicated Kinga would be the door closer. I was curiously absent from both the clandestine elimination of the undead and the heroic door-closing ops. Mine was to be Operation Stay the Hell Up Here and Don't Get in the Way. I could see it coming.
What about me? I dared ask.
Remo was still staring at the crude drawing I had made of the wheelhouse. I used to suck at Pictionary.
You're going to stay here and guard our retreat if necessary. Don't let anything get between us and the ladder.
I noticed Kinga smirking as he pulled one of three suppressors from a sleeve in his tack webbing.
Prick.
Remo glanced at me, staring at Kinga.
Cans on.
I actually knew what that meant. A can was military slang for a suppressor. A suppressor is a silencer, for you folks that actually believe in silencers. That shit isn't silent, but it's significantly quieter, and it's hard to pinpoint the sound when you hear it. We all screwed the long tubes to our tactical pistols. We each had three suppressors. And another fact you probably don't know is that they burn out over time. They begin to get louder as you shoot through them, and you have to change them out. They also add weight to the end of the weapon, are a bitch to use in close quarters, and can affect accuracy on a long shot. I friggin' love them. There's something inherently cool about shooting with a suppressor. Both Remo and Kinga checked the wheelhouse with their little mirrors again. Remo nodded and Cat quietly moved down the ladder. Kinga followed, and I leaned through, scanning. All three zombies were pawing at the front glass on the port side, even though one of the windows was broken out starboard center. Pussbags were still trying to get to the memory of Remo when he dangled out in front of them. Both of the jarheads crept silently behind the long consoles, and both looked into the open rear doors. There must not have been anything there, because Remo kept going, slinking up to the first deadhead. He brought his arm around in a wide arc, perforating the temple of the closest creature. He reversed his hand and stabbed the second one in the same spot. Both dropped. Number three turned, snarled, and before she could take a step, had an inch of steel sticking out of the top of her skull. Remo had thrust the blade up under her chin. Kinga closed the doors and secured them.
Clear!
Clear,
Remo echoed, and checked the portside hatch. I climbed down the ladder and made sure the starboard hatch was secure. The three of us looked out the windows at the deck. Shitloads of those things meandered through the labyrinth of steel containers. The critters were in varying stages of decomposition, some rotten and some looking relatively fresh. I was scanning for black camouflage to identify the team sent here before us, but I couldn't see any. I checked out all the doors once more. The rear doors hadn't been broken down, and honestly, I don't know if they could be. They were thick wood set in steel frames with top, bottom, and side locking mechanisms, probably to defeat pirates. The side hatches were comprised of steel, with eight of those little handles used to secure them. They also had locks, and Captain Bob had told me that the windows in those hatches are bullet-resistant. I couldn't help but wonder where Captain Bob had gone to. Why would he leave? His job was to take the Majestic and beach it as close to Mexico as he could. It was a suicide mission at the time. This was months ago, before we had a destroyer at our disposal. Now the plan was to evacuate all of the living from this tub and scuttle her. They were going to blow a hole below the waterline and watch her sink. Some folks had argued that we should clear the ship and use it as a floating hotel, or at least check out the containers. I had argued right back that they were fucking crazy. The ship was crawling with infected, and any of the people who suggested we clear it could feel free to open whatever they wanted on this thing as soon as I was off of it. Nobody volunteered.
Okay, I sighed. We're secure. What now?
Kinga put his hands on the console, looking at the innumerable dials, switches, buttons, and lights.
Now we find out where everybody is.
Small talk. What we really needed was implants in people that could be read from a central unit in the Majestic's wheelhouse. Did you see the movie Aliens, when the survivors of the initial alien attack are holed up in operations and they are looking at electronic blueprints of the facility? They search for the implants and find out that all the humans are in one central location. Exactly how we looked right now, except our prints were paper, nobody had any implants, and we had zombies instead of aliens. Basically, we were screwed. We could probably search this giant vessel for a week and not find where my friends were hiding. Throw in some infected, and we're here forever. I'm going to check the bodies. Both of the boys looked at me like I was crazy. One of them should have the key that Schumitz wants. I noticed a big body with a black T-shirt covering most of its face. This had been a friend of mine. I actually got a lump in my throat and felt not a little bit of guilt. I had shot him when he had begun to fade out after being bitten. I got to one knee and touched his hand. The memory of his death was crushing. The things up here hadn't torn him to pieces, so I could only assume that whatever time frame it takes for a body to turn unappetizing to the dead had expired prior to them gaining access to the wheelhouse. I moved to where I remembered the slumped body of Dr. Callis was. She was still there, but stretched out with her hands folded on her chest. Her face was covered with a towel. I looked at her and immediately felt sad. This woman, however stupid, didn't deserve to die like this. She had forcefully brought hundreds of infected on board this floating sanctuary in order to study them, to find a vaccine or a cure or whatever. I hated her for being such an idiot, but looking at her corpse, I started thinking about all the other dead people in the world. They had been people just like me, all dead because of this stupid plague. But this dumbass had still killed a bunch of people who otherwise would have made it, at least a while longer. I parted her formerly white shirt and saw a chain around her neck. I pulled on the chain, and some of her goo came with it. It was nauseating. I jerked the chain, and it came free with the same type of key that Schumitz had. It was red and roundish, a cylinder with pieces cut out, some type of metal. Why hadn't the first group sent by Schumitz at least taken this key? I wiped the key in the dead doctor's pants and put it in a small steel box that Captain Schumitz had given me. The box was attached to a chain exactly like the doctor's, and I put it around my neck. Remo and Kinga were messing with something when I returned to the consoles. Kinga looked up. Did she have it? A key? Yeah. But I don't know where the data would be. We need to call that in, Kinga informed me. Where is it? I patted my chest. Safe. He held out his hand. I'll take it. I pulled the whole shebang out of my shirt and handed it to him. He put the chain around his own neck, the little box now inside his own shirt. Copycat. Several dead had made it up the long steel stairway and had begun scratching at the portside hatch window. We all looked and then got back to the task at hand. Kinga began setting up the comlink thing again. I asked him why he didn't just use the Majestic's radio, and he told me it wasn't secure. Remo shook his head in what could only be disgust and removed his helmet to wipe his forehead. Those looks were usually directed at yours truly for doing something monumentally stupid. But I hadn't done anything dumb for at least 10 minutes. At least I didn't think so. Remo picked up a phone and pressed a button.
To the soldiers, sailors, crew, and refugees on board the Majestic Maersk. My team is here to remove you from this ship and bring you someplace safe. If you can hear me and are near a phone, please call the wheelhouse.
He replaced the receiver, which was on a cord, if you can believe it, back in the cradle. The phone rang in under 10 seconds. Remo, having kept his hand on it the whole time, picked it up immediately.
"Yes? Yes, we're in the wheelhouse. We have it secured, but we'll need to get to you. Do you have the data Schumitz was looking for? Where are you? How many of you are there? Exfil is a boat coming tomorrow. My team will come for you within the hour. Sit tight."
"Wait!"
I had positively yelled that. Remo gave me a sideways glance.
"Ask if Ship Alvarez and Donna are with them."
Remo asked, and then nodded to me in the affirmative. He passed me the receiver.
"This is Alvarez.
Are you still ugly?"
A large vehicle could have been driven through my smile.
What? Who is this?"
My face was in deep shit later, as this particular smile got even bigger and threatened to rip my cheeks apart.
"Well, you dumb SOB, you and I came to Atlantis together. I met Ship in New Hampshire, I fixed stuff, and a crazy CIA guy kidnapped me off of an oil rig. Ugly and dumb."
"You! You bastard! You're alive?"
"I am. Yeah."
I could hear him talking to the others with him, but couldn't hear what was being said. There was some crying in the background. It was probably not Ship.
"Good to hear your voice, buddy. I wish you weren't here, though. This is going to get bad. Ship is scribbling furiously, and a certain young lady would like to speak to you."
My girl got on the phone.
"Thank you for not being dead."
"I do what I can."
"Where are you? Did they hurt you? How did you get away?"
All of a sudden, her tone changed.
"Are you crazy? What the hell are you doing here? You're going to get yourself killed."
She kept going, and before I could get a word in edgewise, she was telling me that Ship had passed her a message. There was a pause.
"You're absolutely right."
She hadn't said that to me.
"Ship says you're an imbecile and should have known better than to attempt a rescue. You're too important to die on this boat. I agree with him. Why are you here?"
"Well, somebody had to save your dumb asses, and that somebody is me."
Remo and Kinga were looking at me.
Us. We're going to come get you."
"This horrible ship is crawling with infected. They're everywhere."
She sighed.
"You should just leave."
"Okay."
I acquiesced, shrugging. Not that she could see me through the phone.
"We're just going to take off. I'll order you a pizza before I go."
"Oh, darn. Oh, fudge, and oh, golly, and stuff. You have something I need. I can't leave." "The hard drives. That's why you're here."
I heard her snap her fingers. She was always doing that shit. It was unnerving. She also has this nasty habit of screaming "sock" and hitting me across the face with one of her socks. That shit is terrifying, but hilarious at the same time.
No. I'm here for you and the other two dumbasses that are with you. I don't give a shit about hard drives.
That having been said, who has them?"
Alvarez had the hard drives. They had lost plenty of men getting them, though. Of the 12 that had come back to this boat, 3 were left. But they had picked up another 3 that had survived for more than a year on this infected tub. I also learned that Captain Bob's body was nowhere to be found when the team had entered the wheelhouse. The rest of the information would have to wait until we got to the survivors, as it was time to get this show on the road. I was more than a little apprehensive, but it was now or never. Also, if you never saw the movie Aliens pre-plague, you're a dumbass. Upstairs, downstairs. Kingo had radioed in to Schumitz on the Atlantis and had left the key secured on the roof of the superstructure. Now if anything happened to us, at least they could get that damn key. So we had that going for us. Our rescue attempt would be in the galley. That's where everybody was holding up. I had been thinking that the thing to do was what we always did. Set up something that makes a ton of noise as far from us as possible, then move in and do what we want. The problem with that plan was that there was no way to get far away on this boat. The infected was swarming the deck, and several were already at the port and starboard hatches to the wheelhouse. We would have to go quiet, as Remo was fond of saying. "But what if there are 50 of them right on the other side of this door?" I asked, pointing at the secured heavy doors that led to the bowels of the ship.
Wow! Never thought of that until right now. I was about to descend into bowels.
Ew!
I had already been down there once, and it was bad. Kinga spat.
Then we're in deep shit. You'll fall back to the ladder and get out.
What about you guys?
Aw, princess, you worried?
Kinga asked, checking his rifle.
You're not that pretty.
Remo smirked. That was unfair. Number one, I was worried. These were good men. Number two, I am pretty. Classically handsome is the term.
Yeah,
I don't want to see you get eaten. Remo pointed toward the door. He had already listened and had come up with nothing. He unlocked the top and bottom bar locks and put his paw on the door handle. On three, he mouthed. I was nervous as he nodded his head once, twice, and on the third nod, threw the door open wide. Two dead men greeted us. Truly dead. One was slumped to the side on the landing with half his head missing. It was crushed, not shot. Which told us a few things. The mostly eaten carcass with what looked like military garb next to him told us other things. The top of this one's head was missing, and the smeared spray on the wall communicated to me he had blown his own head off. Bitten or trapped. The fluorescent overheads and small sunken wall lights were crusted in gore, bathing the landing and stairs below it in an eerie red-brown light. I peered over the side of the top railing. The stairway was such that each landing blocked my view when I tried to look down, but absolutely no light filtered up from below. I was amazed that the ship still had power after so long without maintenance. Surely they must be low on fuel by now. Both MARSOC guys panned back and forth with their tactical lights.
L3's on, lights off, Remo whispered into his mic.
One of the things that Schumitz had provided us was ground panoramic night vision goggles, GPNVG. Desert Coyote in color, the eyepieces actually looked like two sets of binoculars attached by a rail across the top. They were mounted to our helmets, and when they were deployed, swung down to cover our eyes, they made us look like that three-eyed alien from Star Wars, except these things had four eyes. They gave us a wider field of vision than regular NVGs, and although bigger, they were lighter on our heads. I flipped a thing down, and it turned on automatically. Everything went green.
It was fucking fantastic! I almost giggled. I could see everything. I could read the lettering on Kinga's assault pack. Did I mention it was awesome? 'Cause it was awesome, dipped in awesome with awesome sauce.
I took another look down the stairs, but the view was the same.
Oh, and no way was Schumitz getting these back.
Call it hazard pay, but these things were just too cool.
Me first, then you, Remo pointed at me. Then you, Kinga. Check each door, but don't open it. We go quiet from here on. If we are going to get overwhelmed, or if we get separated, fall back to the stairway and up into the wheelhouse. Exfil to the Monkey Island if the wheelhouse gets compromised.
Kinga began closing the doors as I wondered WTF a Monkey Island was. We had left our HK-416s on Atlantis and were using MP5 SD-3s. These were more submachine guns than battle rifles, but they were fitted with integrated suppressors. Kinga leaned toward me when Remo took his first cautious step down the stairs.
The Monkey Island is the roof of the wheelhouse.
I nodded and began to follow Remo. Our boots made almost no sound as we descended into the darkness. We had been moving down the superstructure for a few minutes when we heard a moan from below, and Remo threw up his left hand. We waited, listening, but all we heard was some movement. Nuts clenched, I trailed the MARSOC guy as he moved downward. All the doors inside this tower were locked as we moved down. We had learned from the crappy non-electronic blueprints that the galley was in the center of the ship on Deck 3. There were six decks, and we were on the landing outside of Deck 5 when we heard the moan again. It was followed by a rasping hack chaser, and they were too close together to be one critter. We had multiple targets in the stairwell. Is it a stairwell on a ship?
Nautical terms are beyond me for the most...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?